The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. Can Liverpool cope without Van Dijk? Yes, just in Amsterdam as Fabinho slots in nicely. City come from behind to beat Porto, with Pepe being Pepe, perhaps giving us the most entertainment. The big story of the day is in Madrid, where a second-string Shakhtar beat Real, while Atleti get hammered by Bayern at the Allianz. Sid joins us to look back at them and ahead to El Clasico this weekend. There's another nomination for Best Pass Ever, a Premier League preview, a very important travelling Wilbury's correction, your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Ed Ahrens. Nice to see you. How are you?
I'm very good, and you?
I'm tremendous. Thanks very much. Mark Langdon from the Racing Post.
Oh, hi, mate.
Hiding in your loft.
It's best place to be. Best Nowhere place else I'd rather be.
Mark Langdon's loft. TripAdvisor, 5 stars. The best place in the world ever. Hey, Barry Glendenning.
Hey, Max Rushton. How are you?
Do you care?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I'm fine. Thanks very much. No different to when I saw your face on Zoom yesterday, if I'm brutally honest. Let's start then with Liverpool's win in Amsterdam. Tagliafico's fun own goal, the difference between the sides. All eyes were on the Virgil van Dijk-sized hole in the Liverpool defence. Klopp popped Fabinho in it, and he's quite good, isn't he, Ed?
He is. He is very good. I mean, he's very good in his normal position, which is, you know, in central midfield, in the engine room. But yesterday he was immense at centre-back and really led that defence, I thought, and was the foundation of Liverpool's victory, really. Especially, everyone saw the goal line clearance to deny Tadic. But it was more than that. He was really vocal, pointing a lot, and just generally trying to fill those massive shoes that Van Dijk, normally... Is in the middle of that defence telling everyone what to do, and it was Fabinho yesterday. But he's going to be absolutely vital for them for the rest of the season because obviously Van Dijk's not going to be around for some time.
I like pointing a lot, being that is something a centre back needs to do for people Definitely. Like us to think he must be good. He's pointing all over the place. I loved with the Fabinho goal line clearance that Adrian did a sort of kicking motion to sort of will. Not that it was Adrian's fault, really, but, to be out, he wasn't out of position. He was just lobbed well by Tadic. But just a motion to Fabinho, this is how you kick a ball. Ed, you wrote about Joe Gomez next to Van Dijk, didn't you?
Yeah, and obviously, mentioning Adrian there, there was quite a few moments where you can imagine Adrian, his heart stopped, especially that one at the beginning where Gomez... And him, there was a bit of confusion with a back pass, and it ended up with Adrian rushing out, really probably doing the right thing in the end, having done the wrong thing initially, rushing out and clattering into Gomez just to make sure the ball went out. But I thought Gomez, he's an interesting player because he's been thrown into the deep end by Klopp a few years ago when he was very young, and has progressed in some ways and not progressed in others, and now really the spotlight is on him. For the next few months, especially at Liverpool, but also I think with England, because he could be quite a good option potentially in the long term. And I thought he had a few shaky moments, but came through it in the end, thanks in large part I think to the help of Fabinho, alongside him with all the pointing. And also I think Klopp was very very vocal towards him. What I could hear in the first half, he seemed to be a lot of his instructions seemed to be towards Gomez as well. And I think it was very encouraging for Liverpool fans that, hopefully he can grow into the defender that, I think especially Klopp believes he can be one day.
Barry, the goal was, I thought, against the run of play, but what a lovely own goal. Peter Drury on commentary described it as a desperate failure of coordination.
And that was just Sadio Mane. I mean, it was like me hitting a 7-iron on a golf course, the big divot he took before he hit the ball. And yeah, Tagliafico just couldn't get his feet out of the way, could he? And it was yeah, comical own goal. Now, it won't be in contention for goal of the tournament, let's say.
Ajax hit the post early in the second half, didn't they, David Klaassen? And they could have easily got something from this game, Mark, I thought.
Yeah, I felt that they probably did deserve a point from the match. They played better than I thought that they would. I don't know if they were maybe just encouraged by the fact that Van Dijk wasn't there, and that may be something that Liverpool have to deal with as the season goes on, that teams... feel like they've got more of a chance against them and can sort of, you know, create more opportunities than they ordinarily would. I thought Ajax probably at the end of the game will be ruining some of those missed chances and some of those moments that they had where some of it was a little bit of bad luck and some of it just, you know, that final decision on that final moment just didn't go for them. But as far as Liverpool are concerned, I think it is really difficult to play as a centre back for Liverpool because the fullbacks generally go high, and Klopp wants the centre backs to play high, so that really does leave somebody like Gomez. You know, I think it's harder than say Tarkowski playing for Burnley at centre back. You know, so whoever fills in while Van Dijk's out has got a difficult job on. I think
I like watching Ajax just to see the new breed come through. It's quite funny, actually, because they have all these young whippersnappers who are 20 years of age or younger. And then you have Davy Klaassen, who I'm not sure what age he is, but he looks about 72.
I actually Googled Davy Klaassen at Everton because I was thinking, I'm sure he had a full head of hair then and he's lost it in the space of like 10 minutes. But actually, he was already sort of receding while he was at Goodison.
But you've Ryan Gravenberch there, he's 18, he's the new... Frankie de Jong, Peter Schurz, who centre back, he's the Matthias de Ligt, and Mohamed Kudus, who I think he didn't last long, he had to go off very, very early in the game, but he's Donny van de Beek. So they just seem to have this constant production line of good young players who will probably have a great season and then get sold for a fortune to many other lots of other different clubs.
Yeah, Gravenberch is an interesting one because he's, there was a bit of doubt about whether he would sign a new contract this year at Ajax. He's the sort of the new youth phenomenon, I think. And his agent is Mino Raiola. So eventually he did sign a contract, but, you know, he's already got his eyes on a move next summer. And I think, yeah, he looks the real deal, actually. He had quite a good game yesterday from what I saw. I was concentrating more on Gomez and Liverpool's defence, but... He, in the first half especially, Ajax really dominated the midfield, I thought, and they looked pretty decent.
And I think from just in terms of the one that hasn't left Ajax that I really expected to was the goalkeeper, Onana, who has his rash moments, and I think it was one or two occasions when he came flying out, but he's a very positive, sort of modern goalkeeper, made some good saves at the end. I think he can probably feel hard done by, really, that he's been left behind while virtually all of those others that starred in the run to the semi-finals a couple of seasons ago have all kind of got their big moves, and he's been left behind. Hopefully that comes for him at the end of this season. I think he deserves probably to move on.
What did you make, Ed, of Klopp taking off the front three all at the same time in a wild 59th minute moment of panic or whatever it was? I mean, it wasn't panic, was it? But it was just quite fun to see them all go off at the same time.
Yeah, it was a bit like an American football sort of substitution, wasn't it? They all just trundled off the pitch. But I think there was a bit of worry, though, because Mane seemed to have an injury, didn't he, afterwards? And he was being...
Had a lot of ice on his leg.
Yeah, which, you know, and he was fantastic yesterday, wasn't he? He was the real... Probably the difference between the teams in the end. But actually, the front three that came on, it worked quite well for them because they... Liverpool, you know, there was a couple of hairy moments towards the end, but they started to dominate again and really should have scored another goal. And I think Jota has added quite a bit to Liverpool. You know, it's a serious contender to get in the front three. I mean, he's probably not going to start that many games because of Salah and Mane, but he's added quite a bit to their squad.
Could you play Jota and Salah and Mane? Or is that not fair on Firmino? Is it too sort of cliche to decide that Firmino's the one of those three that it will go?
I think Mane could play as the false nine. Or maybe, and also they've done it with Salah playing more as a central striker, or them as a two, maybe. But yeah, that wouldn't have a place for Jota. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting because Firmino's getting a lot of criticism at the moment, and he's not scoring many goals. But you know, he is he has been the secret to that front three, really. I know the other two are outstanding and score the goals, but, you know, he, everyone knows he's been the person who is kind of the link man. So it'll be a concern for Liverpool that, to get him back to his best.
Jurgen Klopp said the pitch was deep and muddy. He has clearly never played on Donkey Lane or Ebog away or Gunnersbury Park away at Actonians. If they've got Actonians late in November, then he'll discover what deep and muddy really means. Also in that group, Midtjylland 0, Atalanta 4. It was incredibly wet. I was watching the goals show. Am I allowed to watch that show, Barry? I'm not entirely sure, but I was, and I'd like to apologise to you well, and your family.
No need to apologise to me. James Horncastle is rocking a splendid beard. He looks like some sort of 18th century French aristocrat.
Yeah, and it was James who left his chateau to tell me that Papu Gomez is sort of one of the best players outside the elite clubs. And Mark, I mean, he scored an absolutely blinding goal, didn't he?
He did, yeah. I mean, he's, I suppose, a bit of a throwback because the talk is that, and you know, with Mesut Ozil sort of being dumped by Arsenal, and Arsene Wenger said, you know, there's no room for that kind of, you know, number 10 anymore in the game. Everybody wants to press. I mean, Papu Gomez, it is a bit of a throwback, I think, to kind of that classic Argentinian playmaker in the way that he's just a rhythm player and makes the team, you know, just tick all the time. It was a brilliant goal from him. It's actually the 27th time that Atalanta has scored four or more goals under Gasperini. So a truly fun team to watch. And Papu Gomez is the one that just links everything together.
In Group C, Man City 3, Porto 1. A brilliant opening goal from Luis Diaz for Porto, which Martin Keown described it as awful defending. he did say it was a great finish as well. So in many ways, a good comeback, Barry. Would you say it was comfortable in the end?
It probably was, but I think there was a lot for Pep Guardiola to be pleased with, and a lot that I imagine he will be very displeased with. Some of Manchester City's defending was awful, including for that first goal. Ederson made a couple of mistakes, but ultimately, you know, you get a win on the board in the first game in the group stages, and you're halfway there nearly. And if I was a City, it was not one of City's better performances, put it that way.
The penalty, Sergio Aguero scored it. His first goal in any competition since March against Sheffield Wednesday, 231 days ago. The longest gap between goals in his career, brackets, there was a pandemic and there was no football for quite a long time, close brackets.
Open brackets again. He also had to wait like about 10 minutes to take the penalty, which increased the length of time since he had last scored.
It's true.
And I can open some more brackets and say he was injured as well during that time.
But that's also true. Close all those parentheses. Always nice to see Pepe, who fouled Sterling for the penalty. Mark says, I could barely believe my eyes when I spotted perennial bad boy Pepe on my screen playing for Porto when zapping between Champions League games. When did that move happen? And is he still a master of shithousery? Well, it was 2019, Mark. He's now 37. And well, this was from Robert. Can you dedicate at least half of the next pod to the beautiful shithousery of Pepe on Sterling late in the game? Knee in the nuts, shout in the ear, another knee, and then accuses him of diving. Legend. It was the stuff of dreams, Mark, wasn't it?
It was trademark and sort of classic Pepe. It's what you tune in. You know, if you're watching Pepe, that's what you want from him, really. I was delighted that Sterling kind of bought the penalty from him. I'm sure Pepe would have appreciated it.
I mean, it's not subtle, though, is it? I mean, that's the amazing thing. Like, basically, in that incident, he gives away a penalty, really. He fouls Sterling, and then he knees him in the stomach, and then he yells at him.
The thing about Pepe, though, is Sid will be joining us shortly, and he's probably the man to ask, but he is, by all accounts, an absolutely lovely fellow. Yeah. Really, really nice guy off the pitch. And a total shithouse on it.
Gives all his money to stray cats' homes, doesn't he? Porto had a couple of great chances at 1-1, actually. Kyle Walker made a brilliant challenge. Gundogan scored a great free kick. Does anyone have any strong views on Gundogan? He's just sort of there. And he's clearly must be, if you're in City's 25, right, by definition, you're one of the best footballers in the world. But I just, I don't know how I feel about him. Can someone give me an opinion on Gundogan that I can take for my own?
Well, I think at City, he's a small fish in a big pond. If he was at some other slightly, if he was at Aston Villa, he'd obviously be, you know, a wonderful player. If he was at Southampton, you would notice him a lot more.
I think he sacrifices himself. When he was younger, he was much more of an attacking player, wasn't he? He's had some bad injuries as well. And I think that is part of the reason that he doesn't get forward as much. And also the array of attacking talent that City have. So, yeah, I think he's a very good player. But he, I know what you mean. He does go under the radar. He's kind of can fit in when someone else is injured. And, you know, but yeah, maybe he's better than people think. I think he is better than people think.
Barry, would you say you were a big fish in a small pond, a small fish in a big pond, a big fish in a big pond, or a small fish Bloody in a small hell. Pond?
It's more of a medium fish in a medium-sized pond.
I'm a medium-sized chub in an aquarium full of garish and arresting tropical fish.
Piranhas.
Thanks very much. Pep brought on Torres and Foden, who worked really nicely together for that Torres goal, didn't they? And Ian says, why was Steve Lamacq in goal for Porto? And that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll bring Sid Lowe into the chat and we'll talk about defeats for Real Madrid and Atleti. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Now, Barry, on the 9th of November, Monday, 7:30 p.m., is a Guardian live show where people don't even need to leave their house, do they? Me, you, Wilson, Barney. £6, sell it to the people.
Well, I think as you pointed out, it's £8.95 cheaper than West Brom 0, Burnley 0.
It is.
I think that tells you all you need to know. It's an absolute bargain. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing how enthusiastic Barney is on the evening in question.
We guarantee at least the same level of entertainment as West Brom Burnley. Paso Primero says, I can't wait. Let me know if you need a wine sponsor. I'm happy to send you all a bottle of our official Shrewsbury wine. Shrewsbury wine, got to pronounce that correctly. Which doesn't sound that tempting, I'll be brutally honest. Guaranteed to make any microwave anecdote at least 10% funnier. Now, apparently the wine is made in Spain and not in Shropshire. But as I said, we're not allowed to accept freebies, Barry, because...
Well, I think we are up to a certain value. So,
oh, really?
If they send us the cheapest plonk they have, that's okay.
Yeah,
okay. I'm wholeheartedly in favour of having free wine to help get me through the evening.
Okay, so send it to us and it's much appreciated. Anyway, let's welcome Sid Lowe and talk about some football. Hey, Sid.
Hello, how are you? I was Shrewsbury. I was shocked at the thought that they might have wine. I'm glad to know it comes from Spain. Do we know whereabouts in Spain?
Well, I'm sure since we've discussed it for this amount of time, they will let us know exactly where, and I will let you know next time we speak, Sid. Real Madrid 2, Shakhtar 3. Fun game this, wasn't it? Real almost coming back from 3 down. An injury time equaliser ruled out by VAR. But in the first half, they were blown away by what is sort of Shakhtar reserves. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I can't remember what the number was. I think it was 13 Shakhtar players unavailable because of a combination of injury and COVID. Madrid, it's true, made changes. But of course, you can't make as many changes as a team that's forced to make 13 of them. And Madrid were just... I mean, probably the most striking of the first half moments is actually the one that Shakhtar don't score. It's the first chance they get, and they just go through this absolutely enormous hole in the middle of the pitch. And one of the centre backs is way off over on the left. The other is way off over on the right, but higher up than them. It's not so much a line as a kind of a squiggle. The back four. It's just extraordinary how easily they're taken apart. And one of the things that makes it worrying from Real Madrid's point of view is that it's not massively dissimilar to the first half against Cardiff at the weekend, when more or less the same sort of thing happened. I think it's more embarrassing for them. I think it's more worrying, if only because of the cumulative effect, and also because in theory at least this is a pretty poor team, and you'd say, you know, Cardiff were as well, a newly promoted side to the first division. But it was, I mean, you're right, it was a lot of fun, but it was ludicrously open.
Mark, are Shakhtar good? I mean, if this is their reserves, they really did look good. Why are they not in the first team, or why are Shakhtar not better?
I think Shakhtar have always been able to sort of play that attacking football, quite well, and they've caused problems for a lot of teams. And it doesn't, it clearly doesn't matter whether Alan Patrick and Tyson are playing, or the people that come in to replace them. But they've always had this vulnerability about them defensively, which we saw in the Europa League when Inter cut them apart. It feels like ages ago, but it was only a couple of months ago, wasn't it? And I think that that's probably been their issue in terms of Champions League. They're fine going on the offensive. It's just they've been unable to keep teams out. And I suppose even with that 3-0 advantage, they very nearly blew it, even though Real Madrid were clearly there for the taking. So they've also been handed some nightmare groups. They seem to play Man City every single time, which doesn't help your defence usually.
Sid, a lot of people, had that been a game in England, the commentators would have said this is a massive half time for the manager. You know, he's got to get a reaction. And I guess he did get a reaction. Now, they did almost come back. Will that be seen as important or not really?
No, not at all. I mean, I say not at all in the sense that I don't think it will be put forward in his defence. And there's a lot of pressure on Zidane now. And in a way, it's remarkable how close he always is to this level of pressure, given everything that's been won. But he kind of is always closest. Remember last year, they'd been beaten by Mallorca 1-0 in the La Liga, so I suppose it's a sort of similar sort of thing. They went away to Istanbul, and there was a lot of talk at the time that if Madrid had lost in Istanbul, Zidane would have been sacked. And I want to stress this now, this wasn't just press talk. This was because internally, there really was a conversation about whether, okay, this is the end for this guy. And Zidane is partly on the edge all the time because of the nature and the culture of this Real Madrid club, because of the way that they see managers, even managers like him. But no, his change last night really didn't. I don't think it really makes a difference in terms of people saying, oh, well, look at least he saw it. Not least as well, Max, because the context is of course, that this happened on Saturday. They had possibly the worst first half I've ever seen them have in La Liga against Cardiff. At halftime, they're 1-0 down. And as Zidane himself said, you know, if it had been 2 or 3, we couldn't have complained. You know, they'd been absolutely taken to bits by Cardiff. Cardiff had genuinely had 5-6 really good chances in the first half. Shakhtar had how many yesterday? Well, the 3 they scored, that first one. You could probably say Shakhtar could have got 5 by half-time yesterday as well. And Zidane, what he did at the weekend was change 4 men. But it felt like it was a 4 men in terms of, well, take them off, put some others on, rather than this was really thought through. So no, I don't think his half-time behaviour could have done anything really to rescue him yesterday, even in the event of a 3-3 draw.
And Sid, Clásico coming up at the weekend against a Barcelona side that's reckoned to be in disarray and in turmoil. What happens if he loses that?
Well, that's a very good question, and it kind of is the question at the moment as well, because I can't quite bring myself to believe that genuinely he could be on the edge if they lost that. But given everything, you know, given the everything that he's won, given the symbolism that he has, given the fact that, because bear in mind, obviously, the context of this is a manager who comes back to Real Madrid at a time when they need him much more than he needs them, much more. And certainly when you've got to see this through a political prism as well, not just a club prism. So a president under pressure turns to Zidane, and Zidane is if you like, the guy who kind of protects him in that moment of weakness. And so there's a bit of me that resists the idea that Zidane could be facing an ultimatum. But I suppose if they were beaten badly, I wouldn't rule it out, because this is Real Madrid and we've seen these kind of patterns before. So in answer to your question, I don't know, but I don't think it's impossible that he is on the edge if they were beaten badly.
But I mean, Barca lost at the weekend as well. I mean, who's worse?
Well, I think, look, I think Real Madrid are worse than Barcelona. I think Barcelona are playing much better football. I do think that there's a vulnerability about Barcelona, though. Although it is also true that some of the issues that we saw at the weekend, because I thought they played I mean, at the weekend, you could kind of put the two halves together. Real Madrid's first half and Barcelona's second half in a 1-0 defeat against Getafe. Put them together and you've got one of the worst performances ever from these two teams. They were both slightly better in the other half. Barcelona started all right and Madrid finished all right-ish, sort of. I think Barca played better football, but I have doubts about the structure of the team. I have doubts about the fact that they're so narrow. I think they're probably a team that if you have another team running at them, there's space either side of the two midfielders, because they play a 4-2-3-1, which is essentially, I said this the other day and someone laughed at me, but I think it sort of is right. They essentially play a 4-2 splodge, because it's a 4-2-3-1, but the three and the one are just kind of all more or less moving around in the same area, and it doesn't really feel like it responds to a coherent plan as yet, which is perhaps natural because it's early. But that was partly resolved by the performance, and I'm going to say this badly, by against Vrancrosh, however you say their name. This is when you need Wilson. It's not often you need Wilson, but maybe today we actually do.
Ferencváros.
Thank you, Ferencváros. That's much, much better. And I should have known that. Anyway, but they resolved some of those issues because they played Trincao, which actually gave them some width, actually gave them someone playing on the right who sort of was a winger. And so I think they're getting things right. I think they are better than Madrid, but they are also vulnerable and they don't entirely convince.
On that disallowed last-minute equaliser, Valverde's strike, and I think it was Vinicius Junior was offside and VAR picked it up.
Yeah.
Look, I'm pretty anti-VAR. Nicky Bandini made a really good point, saying, look, every time we get the VAR is the worst conversation on Twitter, I think about situations like the one we just saw that saved Shakhtar from having a sensational win unjustly taken away from them. Sometimes it's horrible, so work on making it better. Don't burn it to the ground. And I was like, oh, no, now I think VAR is a good idea.
No, I think, Max, I think this is part of the thing with VAR. It's part of the thing with VAR is what it did is it raised the stakes, if you like. So VAR comes in and we now expect everything to be perfect. So we overlook the good things because we expect everything to be perfect, because by definition, it's the machines. The machine's going to be perfect. That said, I don't know about you, but I kind of feel like the decision last night that gave Shakhtar the victory that they would otherwise have been denied, I don't know, that should be seen by a human eye, shouldn't it? It shouldn't need a computer. Computer's not the right word. It shouldn't need a TV camera for that, should it?
I agree. It was pretty obvious.
Yeah, but the ball is moving quickly in real time, I would say. And I guess if you have VAR, it's easier to...
Yeah, I mean, I think look, I don't want to bore everyone and get into the VAR conversation again, because...
It's too late for that.
I know. But my issue with VAR, and I'll just say this, is I think I haven't been on the pod saying this before, so you might as well hear from me as you've heard from everyone else, and I've got nothing particularly interesting to say, but let me say it anyway. My issue with VAR isn't whether or not it's more or less fair. My issue with VAR is the toll that you pay for it. I don't care that it's more or less fair. I don't think football was desperately, desperately unfair before. What I care about is that it changes the way we play. It changes the way that referees manage games. It means that we've got a load of technocrats running football now. For the technocrats are running football for the technocrats, and don't get me started on David Ellery. And rather than footballers or fans. And so for me, it's not about the right or wrong. It's about the damage you do to the actual game itself. It's not even the decisions that occupy my mind.
Keith says, is the hymn played after every goal by Real Madrid stirring and inspiring, or overblown and pompous? I go with the latter, especially when VAR overturns a dramatic equaliser. It always, goal music is bad. And that's not the worst goal music. You know, I mean, it's not
Bayern Munich were playing the can-can every time they scored last night. So you couldn't say that was overblown or pompous.
Basically, the can-can was just playing solidly through the 90 minutes then, wasn't it?
Just let me do goal celebrations. I mean, obviously, Seven Nation Army. I mean, how much money have the White Stripes made out of the rights to play their bloody song after every bloody goal at every bloody ground in the world? And you know, you might not have hated that song once, but my God, we all hate it now. The best one is Rayo Vallecano, who play the opening bars of the final countdown after every goal, which is the closest, here comes the obvious joke, zoom, the closest they've ever come to Europe.
Before we get to the Atleti game, Inter 2, Borussia Mönchengladbach 2, also in this group. Lukaku opening the scoring for Inter. He scored in each of his last 9 games in European competition, extending the longest ever such run by an Inter player. Marcus Thuram was fouled for the penalty, made it 1-1, son of Lilian Thuram. Korva said, after Marcus Thuram had to Google himself to provide photo ID to a security guard recently, have you or the panel ever had to Google themselves? He wasn't allowed into the San Siro, and so had to go show his Wikipedia page to the security guard to be allowed in. It does remind me once of during the early Soccer AM glory years, I went to the toilet in an ad break and I wasn't allowed back in by the security guard because I didn't have a wristband on. I was like, I'm mic'd up. Is that a sign?
I mean, to be fair, if you were a thief or a terrorist trying to do real damage to the Sky Studios, one way you do it is dress yourself up as a presenter, put loads of makeup on, put the mic on, and then just stroll in and pretend you own the place. See, they can't be too careful, Max.
That's very true. Marco says, should we add Florian Neuhaus's assist tonight against Inter to the list with Sheringham, Kakar and Ian Crook for the greatest pass of all time? Mark, it was a beautiful pass, wasn't it?
Oh, it was absolutely split into wide open. We then had about a 3-minute VAR wait to make sure that the goal from Hoffman was allowed to be given, because there was a doubt as to whether a player had maybe flicked the ball in the sort of bit between that pass that went to Hoffman, and we sort of went forensic sort of investigation as to whether that there was a slight touch. It was eventually allowed. I think that as far as Inter are concerned, they'll feel like they completely threw that game away. They were in control of it, really, until they went 1-0 up. And then the game seemed to change. And once they went 2-1 behind, they woke up again. And Lukaku just continues to play right at the sort of highest standards at the moment. Got his two goals. Just a massive threat for them. But continue, I mean, talking about Zidane being under pressure, Conte is receiving plenty of flack himself at the moment, because you know, he's very well paid and he hasn't got into going quite the way that I think most Italian sort of football experts expected him to.
In Group A then, Bayern 4, Atleti 0. Before we talk Atleti, Ed, how much better do you think Bayern are than everybody else at the moment?
I think they are quite a bit better than everybody else, but I think the game that a lot of people would like to see again, talking about Liverpool earlier in the show, is Liverpool against Bayern, because, you know, everybody remembers the knockout game between them when Liverpool went on to win it, and that win that they had in Munich. And I think it would be great to see those two up against each other, although perhaps Liverpool without Van Dijk wouldn't stand much of a chance. But yeah, I think that's the big matchup that Europe's sort of waiting for at the moment. I'd say maybe it will happen this year in the competition. We'll see. But it's, you know, certainly a lot of the big heavyweight, you know, Sid was mentioning Barca and Real Madrid there. They seem to be really not up to scratch this season. Well, certainly at the start anyway. So whether that's going to be the case towards the latter end of the competition, we'll see.
I wrote, you know, Tolisso 3-0, goal of the night. And then I had to write Koeman 4-0. Probably goal of the night. Sid, is it fair to say Atleti, they weren't actually that bad in this game?
Yeah, it's stupid, isn't it? But I agree with you. I mean, you sort of see a 4-0 defeat. You see, I think if you look at the goals and you know, the brilliance of the goals, but that wonderful pass from Kimmich that drops behind Kieran Trippier's head. Is that the first or the second goal? I've completely lost track of which order it was in now. That's the first goal, isn't it? You know, you can look at that and question Trippier's defending, but you sort of look at the goals. This is a brilliant team scoring really brilliant goals. I think there were definitely some flaws about Atletico Madrid. I think they don't defend as well as they do. But I must admit, I'm like you. I came out of it thinking, well, they weren't totally awful. They weren't good. I mean, let's be fair about it. They weren't good, and that there are issues with them. And there is a much broader question about Spanish teams, I think, at the moment, with the exception of Sevilla, of the four Champions League teams. I think none of them are we sure about yet. As Ed said, it's quite early. But yeah, I sort of didn't think Atletico were totally abysmal.
If you're saying, you know, Real, Barca and Atleti aren't really at it, then what does that mean for the La Liga then?
Well, I suppose it depends how you want to judge it, because there's a bit of me that quite likes the prospect. That quite likes the prospect that maybe not so much Atletico, but the Madrid and Barcelona might not be really good, and that perhaps we can open this up to a title race that involves Atletico and maybe involves Sevilla as well. I think what will probably happen is that'll even out. I mean, I hate to fall into a trap that I've fallen into in previous seasons, where you get to, I know this year's different because it started later, but you get to kind of October, November, the start of October, November, and you think, whoa, you know, maybe we're going to have a 3 or 4 team title race here. And then it sort of settles into an old routine, and that doesn't happen. And I think it's quite natural that bigger clubs, and particularly in Barcelona's case, trying to integrate new players, a new manager, a new system, then they've got Messi, who, you know, we still don't know kind of his emotional sort of state in all of this. And I think it's quite natural that maybe it takes them a while to get going. But yeah, where does it leave Spain? I think it leaves Spain with worries about their the strength of the league. I think it leaves them, again, as I say, though, with that excitement that the competition might be quite good. And I think also think you've got to look beyond just how they're playing. You look at the transfer window, and I know this isn't the be-all and end-all, but the financial muscle of Spanish clubs is way, way, way down. For example, the English league, the Premier League, I think, outspent them by 3.5 or 4 to 1 over this summer. There weren't really big signings. There was a departure of talent. I mean, to give you one obvious example, and forgive me for saying this, Leeds fans, but a year ago, Rodrigo Moreno was on the verge of leaving Valencia for Barcelona. Then 6 months on, he was on the verge of leaving Valencia for Atletico Madrid, or was it the other way around? I can't remember. But anyway, it was Barcelona. Then 6 months later, Atletico, or vice versa. Then 6 months after that, it's a team that's just come up from the Championship in England. And I think that's the concern for Spain. This isn't just about these teams aren't playing very well at the moment. It's about that there is an underlying trend, which, of course, is rooted in economics, which I think is a worry for Spain. Now, the good news, of course, is that Spain continues to produce the players that they can sell. But it's definitely a concern, yeah.
Sure. Well, I mean, I suppose the big concern, it means Real and Barca will probably only come like 9th and 10th in the European Super League in 2037, and you know what?
There's a sort of a serious point they're hiding in there, Max, which is that when there is a European Super League, if indeed there is, right? At what point do teams like Madrid and Barcelona think, oh, this is a bit shit, coming 8th and 9th and 10th every year?
Well, that was the point that UEFA made in their statement, which said that it's going to be incredibly boring. Actually, that was their official statement about it. And I could, yeah. You know, and it's a very good point, isn't it? And someone is going to have to come, well, however many teams there are in the league, 14th or, you know, last, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Someone's got a big bottom. I mean, I suppose, presumably there's no relegation, so at least you don't have that. But so, it would be great if there was relegation, by the way, wouldn't it? So you get all these big teams, you know, let's say for argument's sake, Liverpool and Man United who push this, they finish bottom two. See you later, here come Wolves.
And you can have a playoff between all the winners of the leagues around Europe, you know, the domestic ones, and then maybe one or two. That would be brilliant.
But no, there should be like League Two should be in that play. You know, let's come on. Let's get MK Dons. Well, that's probably the wrong pick. You know, putting them in an evil league.
Yeah, I think Max, you had a brilliant point that just went up in flames.
What's the Messi happiness index, Sid, out of 100? Where is he today?
I don't know. You know what? I was thinking about this the other day. I asked this because I'm not inside his head, so it's difficult to judge. But I was thinking the other day, does it make a difference that there's no fans? Like, for example, what I mean by this is that everything that's happened this summer involving Messi, and if you like, that kind of psychological difficulty of staying and getting back into the routine. Now, obviously, there's a day-to-day routine of working with the team. But actually, is the thing that would have cured him quickest going back in a stadium, having 80,000 people cheering his name, making him feel like, this is good. But the emptiness of being at Barcelona is presumably exacerbated by the fact that he keeps playing in empty stadiums. So is it even harder this season to kind of reintegrate than it would have been in a normal season? Is it, does this whole thing just feel completely empty to him?
Hey, Sid, we'll let you go. Thanks for coming on.
Okie dokie, pleasure. Cheerio.
Sid Lowe out in Spain there. To the Europa League, a competition that just does not fit in with the pod timings. Celtic, AC Milan, Spurs v Lask, Dundalk, Molde, Rapid Vienna, Arsenal. Mesut Ozil made a statement yesterday saying he's very disappointed by the fact he's not been registered for the Premier League season for the time being. He said, upon signing my contract in 2018, I pledged my loyalty and allegiance to the club that I love, Arsenal, and it saddens me that it has not been reciprocated. As I have just found out, loyalty is hard to come by nowadays. London still feels like home. I still have many good friends in this team. I still feel a strong connection with the fans of the club. No matter what, I'll keep fighting for my chance and not let my 8th season at Arsenal end like this. I can promise you that this hard decision won't change anything in my mindset. I will continue to train as best I can and wherever possible use my voice against inhumanity and for justice. Mikel Arteta said, it's just a football decision. My conscience is very calm. Ed, what do you make of this?
Well, it's really sad to see how it's descended into this, but it's, a very talented player who's, and I thought Johnny Liu's column about him the other day was really excellent. You know, the sad state of affairs that you've got somebody so good who's sitting there not playing for, you know, well, he is playing football, but only in training sessions and seemingly, I mean, Arsenal are pretending it's not or saying it's not, but it seems to be actually a political decision rather than anything to do with football, which is really bad, I think.
How do you mean a political decision in terms of the things he stands up for, or a different kind of political, sort of more football-y political decision?
It seems to be a lot of the things that he's been standing up for, which, you know, and which is a very divisive, you know, opinions that he has about certain things. But I don't know, I think it's not really fair. If that is the case, it's not really fair that someone is, you know, not allowed to play because of that. But I mean, Arsenal are saying that it's not because of that, but it just, it seems really unlikely given his, you know, ability that he, that they can't find a role for him, you know, even as a, not as a starter, but, you know, playing some games for them. Just seems crazy. And then there's the amount of money that he's obviously being paid as well.
Sure. Also in the Europa League, Rangers go to Standard Liège, Leicester City host Zora Luhansk. To finish part two, some really sad news. Just wanted to pay tribute to Simon Dobbin, who passed away yesterday morning. He was a Cambridge United fan. I'm not talking about him because he was a Cambridge fan. You might have heard the story. It's a tragic story. He was attacked after a game at Southend in 2015, was left unable to walk, talk or move independently. 13 people were convicted of being involved in the attack of a completely innocent man. Totally senseless attack. He and his family have had to live with the injustice of it, and our thoughts are with them right now. We'll be back in a sec. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Premier League this weekend. Villa Leeds Friday night. The thing is, Mark, at the start of the season, I wouldn't have thought this would be as enticing a prospect as it is.
Well, no, the title challenge is Aston Villa. I'm absolutely flying at the moment. I mean, they've been fun to watch. They've got a lot of it. So quickly the way they've changed into sort of having, you know, McGinn coming back from injury was obviously a help, but having that focal point to the attack with Ollie Watkins and what he offers them, and then Ross Barkley as well. They've changed a lot, Aston Villa. From lockdown to where they are now, they just about survived last season. And now I actually do quite enjoy, you know, seeing them play football. And I always enjoy watching Leeds as well. They've got a few injuries at the moment, and Bielsa's squad, he likes to run it on quite a small one anyway, but it's been stretched at the moment, and Phillips' injury might just be one too many for them.
West Ham play City, Fulham Palace, Man United Chelsea on Saturday. Luke says, does Mason Greenwood need to make an appointment with Wayne Rooney's watch guy? It's understood that Greenwood's been warned by the club over his behaviour in recent days and weeks, specifically several instances of lateness. It's always interesting, footballers being late. Are they always sort of, you know, they don't have many things to be on time? Or maybe they do have lots of things to be on time for. I don't know. I mean, seems to be something that's should be quite easy to do. I don't like people who aren't punctual.
I abhor a lack of punctuality. I'm rarely, if ever, late for anything. And if I was a manager and had to hand out fines, the ones for lack of punctuality would be huge. It's being late is disrespectful.
Ed, as the man who was 3 minutes late for the pod.
I knew this was going to come back and haunt me.
Because you were finishing your breakfast.
Yeah.
No, Barry's absolutely right. And I have to say, you know, I am sometimes late, but I try not to be. I really hate being late if I can help it. I really try. I'm not, but I agree. It's very important for a footballer. And, you know, Greenwood is really paying the price for that. And it's interesting because I think this is perhaps what Solskjaer was hinting at. If you remember, he scored a couple of goals in a live game at the end of last season. And Solskjaer sort of hinted that there was some stuff going on where he has to be a bit more professional, I think is what he said. And this is perhaps what he was talking about. And maybe it's starting to creep into his game. And, you know, he's paying a penalty now because, you know, he needs to be playing.
Well, he is still young.
Yeah.
True. No, very good point. Give him a break. Turn up when you like, Mason. Just be good. Liverpool, Sheffield United on Saturday night. Southampton, Everton Sunday. Richarlison says he got 10,000 WhatsApp messages in 5 minutes after Neymar showed his phone number during a live-streamed online video game. Also, while we're on Everton, David Coote, the official at the centre of the Merseyside derby controversy, has been dropped from refereeing or VAR duty for this weekend's Premier League matches and will be a fourth official. So I'd like to see how the humiliating position that fourth official is. It's below VAR. So that is a sign, I guess, that they do think there was some sort of mistake, but they couldn't quite bring themselves to actually give Pickford a three-game ban. But let's not go into that anymore.
It'd be quite good if he was fourth official for the Liverpool game, wouldn't it? And then he'd be standing next to Klopp for 90 minutes.
It'd be really good.
Be interesting.
Yeah. Obviously, we do know that Everton players have been fouled in the past. It's important to point that out. Wolves, Newcastle, Arsenal, Leicester on Sunday. Monday's Brighton, West Brom, Burnley, Spurs. Finnegan says, if we're going to have fake crowd noises, why not stop trying to disguise that they're fake? How great would it be if we made an empty turf moor sound like Boca Juniors' La Bombonera at full capacity? Surely it can be done. And this from Ralph Turner. We were talking yesterday about, you know, the Spurs fan who missed the entire progress of the Champions League final because he was on some sort of retreat without any access to anything. And he missed the entire run and missed the final. His son, Ralph, has heard the pod yesterday, has been in touch to say, hi, Max, heard you mention my old man on the pod this morning, so I thought I'd give you an update. We let him know about the journey to the final. We didn't go into much detail on the Liverpool game for obvious reasons. I think he was actually quite relieved we didn't win, or at least it didn't hurt him quite as much as the rest of us. He's been good since then. COVID has meant most subsequent retreats have gone online, which means he has a comfier bed each night. He cancelled his Sky subscription, but was on holiday last week in a place which had the football. So the West Ham game was the first full match he's watched in years. He very much enjoyed it until the 82nd minute. No matter how many retreats in the mountains you go on, nothing is more character building than being a Spurs fan. Thank you, Ralph, for getting in touch. Steve points out, amongst others, it was Jeff Lynn and not Jeff Beck in the travelling Wilburys. We would like to apologise. And if you think that the pod should go off air for a number of months for such a terrible mistake, we would completely understand.
I would also like to apologise because I was pulled up for being a contrarian because I had the audacity to suggest yesterday that Tottenham haven't won many trophies in recent decades. Apparently, that's an incredibly edgy position to take.
Well, you do live on the edge, don't you, Barry? Sean says, will the butter and vegetables chat be at the start or the end? You come for the football, you stay for the butter. Mark, how is your general consumption of food going?
This morning I've just had a salted caramel square for breakfast, so I've started off on the right way. I've not had as much butter in recent months, as to be said. I've tried to move away from butter. I have slightly become addicted to peanut butter, though.
I don't know
if that's better or worse. It feels healthier, but I'm sort of smashing away at that now. I like McDonald's as well, Max.
No shit. You surprised me. All right, anyway, look, that'll do for today. Thanks for your time, Mark.
Thank you.
Cheers, Ed.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, Baz.
You're welcome, Max.
We'll be back on Monday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.